Public Radio News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. In 1999, Maine became the first East Coast state to approve the use of marijuana for medical purposes. Vermont followed 5 years later, but as these two New England states have found, it takes a while to get a medical marijuana system up and running. In Maine, towns often block construction of dispensaries where the drug was supposedly to be given carefully out. In response, Maine voters passed a referendum 3 years ago to ease some restrictions and make it easier to get dispensaries opened. Meanwhile, in Vermont, the state recently put out guidelines for its dispensaries. Vermont is limiting the number to 4 and the number of marijuana patients to 1,000. And now, in between the activity in these two states, comes a reignited debate in New Hampshire on this issue. The Granite State almost approved a medical marijuana bill in 2009. Governor Lynch vetoed it, and the override vote narrowly failed. Last year, a similar bill was tabled. Now it's back, though, and supporters hope that this is their year. But the concerns over medical marijuana remain. How to ensure it's only used by truly needy patients, and fears that allowing the drug for medical purposes is just the first step toward legalization. Today in The Exchange, the medical marijuana debate returns to the Granite State. We begin, though, in our neighboring state of Maine, which, as I said, has a law on the books for a long time. With us now from Portland is John Richardson, staff writer for the Portland Press Herald of Maine. And John, great to have you. Thanks for your time.
No problem. Glad to be here.
Well, as I said, you've had this law on the books since 1999, but it was updated 3 years ago by referendum. What was the problem, John, that people felt needed to be fixed?
Well, the original law, going back to 99, didn't include dispensaries. It was originally a pretty low-profile medical marijuana system. You were allowed to grow your own, or you could have a caregiver grow it for you. And caregivers could have as many as 5 patients. But the access was pretty limited. It was very low profile. There wasn't any clear rules around it. So the 2009 referendum created a network of dispensaries and a formal access system, a formal system for tracking patients and limiting the uses. And we're still working on implementing that law.
Right. So I've heard. And I'm real curious about this low-profile system that you said existed for some time. So under that older system, which, as you said, is no longer in place, how did I certify that, yes, indeed, I'm sick, and yes, indeed, I need to grow this or have a caregiver grow it for me?
It was basically a case-by-case system, and it still exists. You're still allowed to grow your own and still allowed to have a caregiver grow it for you. But you would have to prove if you were arrested with marijuana, you'd have to then prove that you needed it for medical reasons.
You had to show a prescription?
No, you didn't need a prescription. You would need to prove that your doctor recommended it for you, mm-hmm. Which is similar. But it was a very confusing system for law enforcement and created some real conflicts between the medical marijuana community and law enforcement. The new system was supposed to clear that up. And it originally required that everybody would have to have a registration card, a recommendation from a doctor, and one of a short list of conditions that were qualified.
What were some of those conditions, John?
Well, we have a list that includes AIDS and HIV, cancer, glaucoma, multiple sclerosis, Crohn's, and there's a category for intractable pain, which is pain that doesn't respond to conventional treatments.
In some states, they're looking at PTSD, too, post-traumatic stress disorders. Anybody talking about that in Maine, adding that to the list of conditions?
Yeah, a lot of people would like to add that to the list, but the state has been reluctant to add to the list so far. Mm-hmm. Patients with PTSD are getting medical marijuana basically under the intractable pain category in a lot of cases.
So I'm curious about this new system then, John. So now, anybody who says they need marijuana for medical purposes in Maine has to get a registration card, and I'm assuming you get that card after some documentation from your doctor?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way it was set up. You needed to have a doctor's recommendation and register and put your name into a state database. And now one of the problems with the new laws, the medical marijuana community and patients complained loudly about that. They didn't want to be on a list that the state would have attesting to the fact that they were breaking federal law because this is all still illegal at the federal level. So people weren't registering, and patients were still going to the black market.
Wow.
So Maine actually backed off the registration, and that part of it now is optional. A lot of the rest of the law remains. We're still trying to set up the dispensaries.
So how do you prove that you need it? You just have a note from your doctor, but you don't have a registration card.
Exactly. So you can get a registration card if you want to protect yourself. Please come to your door. You can show them that.
I see.
But if you'd rather not, you can go the old-fashioned way and have to show your recommendation from a doctor. It just may be a little more complicated proving that you're legal.
One of the other things I'd like to ask you about that I've heard about in Maine, John, and that is that even though you had this law on the books in 1999, a lot of towns in Maine blocked the dispensaries that were supposed to very carefully hand marijuana out. Where does Maine stand now in terms of getting those dispensaries up and running?
Yeah, the law in 2009 set up a system of 8 dispensaries, one in each medical region of the state. The state granted licenses for 8 or for operators of those 8. That was 2 years ago or a year and a half ago. And we still only 5 of the 8 are up and running, and they're beginning very slowly. It was thought that they would have a lot of patients right away and get up and running fast. They ran into problems locating in communities, which initially adopted moratoriums until they could create zoning restrictions and rules in place and put rules in place. And so that slowed the process down, and some of the dispensary operators had to move from community to community until they found a suitable place. And there are just a lot of other rules in place. You can't grow more than 6 plants per patient. So every time you can only grow so fast, you can't build up an inventory in order to build a patient base until you have the patient base. So it's been a very slow process, and we're still only about halfway to having the network of dispensaries operating.
Sounds like it's tricky for law enforcement, given the shifting ground around the rules and who can and who can't, and questions about the registration and so forth.
Yes, yeah, it's very confusing. There's constant training of law enforcement. Doctors have questions a lot as well. And yeah, everybody's waiting for it to settle in, and it just is taking longer than expected.
All right. Well, John, I really appreciate you joining us. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
That's John Richardson, staff writer for the Portland Press Herald of Maine, which has had a medical marijuana law on the books since 1999, with some changes made in 2009. Our number here in the Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. And today in the Exchange, we're looking at the marijuana debate in the Granite State. Let's hear from you. Should New Hampshire go the way of Maine and Vermont and approve medical marijuana, or does that create an easy path toward broad public use of this drug? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. The email exchange at nhpr.org. With us in studio is Tom Reed, Deputy County Attorney in Rockingham County. And Tom, thanks for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Matt Simon, Legislative Analyst for the Marijuana Policy Project, a national organization promoting reform of marijuana laws. And Matt, welcome back. Thanks for being
here. Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, and Matt, to you first, you know, what do you make of what's happening in Maine and project that onto what might be or what you hope would be put in place here in New Hampshire? Sounds like it's kind of having some bumps getting put in place in Maine.
Well, bumps, perhaps, but what I see is Maine enacted a law in 1999, and the conversation 10 years later was not, should we repeal this law? It was, how do we make this law better in light of what we've learned in the last 10 years? And what they determined was, you know, with support of, I think, 58% of voters, we need better access for patients. Not every patient should have to become a gardener or a horticulturalist to be able to produce medical marijuana, so we need these dispensaries in addition to our law, which already allows people to grow their own. And it has taken some time, but they've been able to get those up and running and sorted it out at the local level. 6 of the 8 are open, and the other 2 are expected to be open within the next couple of months. So we're looking at that as a success story.
Well, you know, just listening to what John said anyway, from a law enforcement perspective, it sounds kind of loosey-goosey, Matt. I mean, it sounds like, you know, anybody can get a note from their doctor and start growing it or get it or whatever.
Right. Well, there were 2 states out of the total of 16 that have not had registries, and Maine's one of those 2. And when they added the registry, I think some people in law enforcement supported that, thought it would be easier to tell a state-issued ID card, you know, from a note from your doctor, which could be forged. So the New Hampshire law includes a registry, and we think that's important to protect patients from arrest, that they be able to present a state-issued ID card.
So the law that you're promoting in New Hampshire has a registry.
That's right.
Might be a problem in New Hampshire. We've got Live Free or Die. We don't like the government looking down our necks.
It might be. The bill passed last year, 229-96 in the House, so... I think it's got broad bipartisan support.
Tom Reed, from your law enforcement perspective, first of all, what do you think about what we heard from John Richardson in Maine?
Well, there are a number of states, as everyone knows, that have passed medical marijuana laws or so-called medical marijuana laws. And I think the states that really start to see problems are the states that have the broader dispensaries available. And that's certainly been the experience in California. And as you indicated, the caller from Maine indicated as well, it's all about getting a doctor's recommendation. It's not a prescription. Marijuana is not recognized as a medicine. And so it's a one-time recommendation from a doctor. In most places, it lasts about a year. But in these areas that have created the ability for lots of dispensaries to open up, what they call coffee shops, clubs, the availability of marijuana has increased dramatically. The perception of marijuana by the youth in the community is that it's now perceived as something that's not harmful, something that's safe, something that they can get quantities from their friends who easily get cards, their parents who easily get cards. And so the availability is increased. The use is starting to increase. But the perceptions of the children that it's not harmful are an error. The perceptions from everyone pitching this right now that it's medicine is false. Marijuana is a Schedule I drug. It's very easy to say, well, it happens to still be illegal federally. But the reality is it's illegal federally for two reasons or on two levels. One is as a drug that you can't sell. But two, it's a drug that can't be prescribed. And it can't be prescribed for a number of reasons. And people who are considering this need to remember that we have a procedure in place that's been the procedure for, 100 years in our medical system in this country for approving drugs. And there's a stringent process of getting FDA approval. And that hasn't been done with marijuana as the plant, but certainly some of the component parts. And so right now it's a Schedule I drug, and it means it's not medicine. Doctors can't prescribe it and don't prescribe it and are in an ethical quandary about allowing patients to use it.
Well, I've got an email from a doctor that I'll share with you after a break. Also, we have a call to a doctor later on in the program. Lots to talk about. We'll be right back.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members. And support also comes to us from the NEEP Network organizations, hosting Destination College, a college planning convention for high school juniors and parents in March. Information at destinationcollege.org. And the New Hampshire Union Leader and newhampshire.com, opening up the stories, events, and resources essential to living in the Granite State. More on the medical marijuana debate in New Hampshire on The Exchange on NHPR and at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show, and the jobs outlook for long-term unemployment. New Hampshire weather today, mostly sunny statewide, highs near 35 in the North Country, around 40 in central parts of the state, 40 to 45 degrees in southern New Hampshire. Tonight, clear and chilly, lows near 10 above north of the White Mountains, ranging to around 20 in southern areas of the state. And for tomorrow, mostly sunny and mild, with highs from 35 north, ranging to 45 in the south. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the medical marijuana debate returns to the Granite State 3 years after it almost became law. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. Should New Hampshire go the way of our neighbors in Maine and Vermont and approve medical marijuana? Or do you have concerns that this would create an easy path toward broader public use and acceptance of the drug, especially among children, as one of our guests has said? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. Also, The Exchange is now on Facebook. You can go to our page, join the conversation there. Our guests in studio are Tom Reed, Deputy County Attorney in Rockingham County, and Matt Simon, Legislative Analyst for the Marijuana Policy Project. And gentlemen, before we go to our listeners, Matt, I did want to go back to you for just a moment. Tom Reed is expressing concerns that many people have, that once you approve marijuana for medical use, it becomes more widely accepted, becomes more widely available, and pretty soon the cat's out of the bag.
Well, it sounds to me, Laura, that Tom's objections are based on a perception of what's happening in California and some other states out west, and is not a reaction to the specific policy that we're putting forward in New Hampshire.
But wait, are you saying that is what happened in California? The cat's out of the bag and it's too loosey-goosey?
Well, New Hampshire passed a ballot initiative in 1996 that was a few lines long. It's never been written into any kind of coherent policy. There's no state regulation of dispensaries. So in places like Los Angeles, you've had hundreds of dispensaries spring up in one city with no regulation. That's obviously a recipe for, you know, it's not what voters had in mind in 96 when they created the policy. Within California, the regulation fell to the counties. So some of the northern counties did more regulation. The dispensaries in San Francisco are very different than the dispensaries down in LA. But we're looking at Vermont and Maine as two states that have implemented, that are implementing dispensaries, total of 8 in the state of Maine, total of 4 in the state of Vermont. We're asking for 3 to get started in New Hampshire, and that is to make sure that the people who truly need this are able to get it.
And yet the system that John Richardson described to us in Maine, Matt, does sound still kind of in flux. You can still grow it on your own. You can still just get a note from a doctor. You know, what if you're not really sick, but your best friend is a doctor? You know.
As far as grow your own, in 99, our bill was a grow your own bill, very similar to what we heard. And Governor Lynch made it very clear that no residential cultivation would be tolerated. He would veto anything if it allowed patients to grow their own. So what we've got now is a bill that was rewritten to make it dispensaries only. So that will be an issue with the startup of the program, that patients won't immediately have access. But the fact that they're in the process of getting access will certainly be better than the status quo, which is that they're criminals in the state of New Hampshire if they choose to go down this path.
So just to clarify, the law that you're proposing, or the bill you're proposing in New Hampshire, is not grow your own. It's dispensaries only, and you're asking for 3.
That's right.
Yeah. And what do you think about that? That sounds tighter, Tom Reed, than what we've heard of in other states.
Well, it may be, but, you know, it remains to be seen. I'm going to repeat that the issue here is, and I think we're aware that there are legalization advocates who are looking for broader legalization of marijuana and all drugs. And there's a lot of money going into that. And that's a debate that may be a worthy debate and certainly can be had. But what's happening here is it's a strategy designed to open the door or wedge the door open under the concept of medical marijuana and get there to be a more general acceptance of people smoking marijuana or an understanding or belief that marijuana is good for you or healthy. And we have a system in place for approving drugs. And marijuana is a Schedule I drug that's not approved. It's determined to be dangerous, susceptible to high levels of abuse, and not recognized for medical purpose. There are component parts that absolutely can benefit patients and people who are suffering, and we should do whatever we can to accelerate the approval process for those drugs. Some of the drugs have already been approved and can be orally administered to folks.
That include components of marijuana.
Absolutely. There are a couple of components of marijuana. I won't even try and pronounce the chemical names. Matt, I'm undoubtedly is aware of what they are. They've been approved, but this, you know, when you go state by state into an area that's regulated by the federal government, the Supremacy Clause is preempted by the federal government, there are ethical standards for doctors which can't be adhered to be involved in this, and you're appealing to the compassionate, human, appropriate response of folks in our legislature when you say, hey, here's an example of someone with a terrible disease, this would make them feel better. And people are going to say, yes, let's get it to them, but it's not medicine, and we have always relied on the FDA, doctors, scientific communities, and associations for saying what's appropriate. And there are none that support medical marijuana.
Well, speaking of doctors, here's an email that I want to share with both of you gentlemen. It's from Dr. Seddon Savage, who's been on our program before. She's president of the American Pain Society. She's also up at Dartmouth. It's a long email, Dr. Savage. I can't read the whole thing, but I will try to give it due justice here. She says, cannabinoids, the pharmacologically active components of marijuana, hold great promise in the treatment of pain. It is important for listeners to know that 2 medications derived from marijuana are already approved by the FDA with indications for nausea with chemotherapy and for weight loss with HIV. It is perfectly legal for prescriptions to prescribe these medications off-label for pain. A 3rd medication now available in Canada that combines numerous pharmacologically active marijuana derivatives is under study by the FDA and expected to be released in the U.S. soon. Here's her point. Dr. Savage says there is no medical reason for patients to expose themselves to pharmacologically variable and toxic hydrocarbon-laden smoke marijuana in order to obtain the potential therapeutic benefits of marijuana. So I wonder what you think about that, Matt Simon. She's a pain expert. She says, yes, there are components that you can use to help your pain or nausea, but you don't have to smoke it.
Well, that's interesting. Yes, there has been a pill on the market since the 80s called Marinol. It's synthetic THC, tetrahydrocannabinol, which is one. It's the cannabinoid that causes the high associated with marijuana, but it's not by any means the only therapeutically active cannabinoid. And a lot of the recent research has focused on other cannabinoids, one in particular, CBD or cannabidiol, is showing, you know, a lot of promise in treatment of various things, especially pain. But there are over 100 active cannabinoids in marijuana that work together in ways that scientists are only beginning to understand. And since research has, you know, I appreciate Tom's call for more research and more actual science here, but that's hamstrung by the federal approval process and by the DEA being in charge of deciding who gets to study marijuana. And the DEA is not a science organization. The DEA is a law enforcement organization primarily.
FDA is, though.
Well, perhaps, but they don't study plants. They don't study ginseng, and they may get into more of that, but marijuana is a unique substance here. We're talking about a plant that grows in the ground, and yes, corporations might be able to make medicines based on it that'll be wonderful and that'll serve patients in the future, but right now there are patients with severe needs, and if they're able to get it out of something that can be grown in the ground, we need to take care of them now.
Go ahead, Tom, real quick, and then to our callers.
Well, certainly, you know, there are a number of medications that grow on the ground or are found naturally. And we provide people penicillin that's gone through testing that the doctors can know exactly what the quantity is. We don't suggest they eat certain types of molds, not good for them. We don't have people smoking opium. We provide the derivatives, and they're tested rigorously, approved by the FDA, and it allows doctors, having seen the test, to know what quantities they're providing to patients and to basically tell them what to take, how much, and when. And that's the healthy, safe way to do it.
If you're so concerned, and I hear your concerns, Tom, why do you think slowly, over the last 10 years, we're seeing more and more states go in this direction?
Well, you know, as was indicated in Maine, they've passed a few laws, but they haven't gotten to the dispensary level. And certainly there is an ongoing debate on how we're dealing with the drug problem in this country. As a prosecutor, I can tell you that we have a lot of drug-related crimes. The fallacy that there are a lot of people in jail or prison for marijuana, you know, possession, is very exaggerated. It is a fallacy. There aren't. But we've got some serious drugs, and we're spending a lot of money and a lot of time. We're starting drug courts and things to deal with people with serious addictions and drugs that are far worse than marijuana. But it's an ongoing debate. It's a social expense. But there is a legitimate debate on some of the drugs and whether or not legalization should be considered. That's the debate that really people are thinking about when they move in this direction. But it's appealing to people's compassion for sick people and having them step away from what's medicine and what isn't and voting on compassion.
Let's take some calls and get our listeners involved in this debate that you talk about. 1-800-892-6477 is our number here in the exchange. 1-800-892-NHPR. Up first is Bran in Jamaica, Vermont. Hi, Bran. You're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Hello, Laura. Actually, it's Bran with an F. I'm a physically disabled individual and a registered patient living in Vermont. I thought you might be interested in hearing from somebody that was actually in the program. I have a 36-year-old artificial hip, two types of arthritis, sciatica, and disc issues in my lower back. And after many years of trying AMA-approved modalities to alleviate my often chronic pain, I have moved away from the narcotics that are prescribed for me by doctors. I'm now legally using medicinal cannabis, and I find the use to be a better alternative to the pharmaceuticals. I see no pattern of dependency developing, as one might find with prescription narcotics. And in effect, I feel this herbal medicine can be effective without affecting my ability to function normally. Although the medicinal marijuana program here in Vermont is far less than perfect at this time, the program does allow the community to see, I believe, the natural medicine working. I would encourage New Hampshire to allow the use of medicinal cannabis, and I would also add that it is unusual that the NIH at this time is attempting to sell, according to news reports that I've heard, the a medicinal patent to a pharmaceutical company.
So, Fran, I got your name right there, Fran?
Yes,
okay.
That's right.
So you said, although the medical marijuana program in Vermont is far less than perfect, what's less than perfect about it from your perspective as a patient?
Well, I found some misinformation from the beginning in the way we could obtain our medicinal cannabis. I find that we've been limited in the number of plants that we're growing because of the number of males you get versus females. That's a technical issue. And I also am concerned about the limitations they've just put out 1,000 patients. I think that would leave a lot of patients standing waiting for medicine. Additionally, the procedures to re-institute your card every year, re-up every year, are extensive for patients and unnecessary for patients that are permanently disabled like myself.
Well, Fran, thanks a lot for calling in. And stay listening, because we're going to go now to a reporter in Vermont who has been covering this issue. Joining us now on the phone is Ken Picard, staff writer for 7 Days, a weekly newspaper in Vermont. Ken Picard, good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, as I understand, there's been a lot of activity surrounding Vermont's medical marijuana law right now, on the books since 2004, but just getting the regulations in place now for dispensaries. Tell us what's going on, Ken.
Well, currently, one of the problems that we experienced in Vermont back when the law was first passed in 2004 was that the law remained silent for about 7 years on where patients would get their medicine. And, excuse me, eventually this issue had to be addressed, because patients who are experiencing AIDS, end-stage cancer, multiple sclerosis and so on, they were basically forced to go on the black market, which basically means ask your friends, ask your the teenager down the street, can you buy me a bag? And so the legislature rightfully recognized that if we are going to allow this, then we need to have dispensaries. And so last year, Governor Shumlin signed into law a bill to create up to 4 nonprofit dispensaries around the state. And the rules for that have just been released by the Department of Public Safety, which in Vermont oversees the state police. They're the folks who manage the medical marijuana registry here.
So, Ken, are you saying that given the dispensaries are going to be up and running pretty soon, you can no longer grow it yourself, or can you do both as they can apparently in Maine?
Well, it's kind of an either-or. The way the law is currently written now, you can either choose to grow it yourself, which some patients have chosen to do, or you can designate a dispensary, once they are up and running. And this will not be a California or Colorado-style system. The Vermont lawmakers were very insistent that they didn't really want to see these things opening on every corner like Starbucks. And so they created them as nonprofit entities. They won't really have a visible presence. You have to make an appointment and go pick it up, and you can't consume it on the premises. You basically take it home, and that's how they wanted to work that.
Well, and as I understand, Vermont is limiting the dispensaries to 4, as our earlier caller just said, and the number of patients to 1,000. How flexible are those limits, Ken? I mean, what happens to patient number 1,001?
Well, we really haven't butt up against that yet. Currently, it's interesting because until September of last year, we really knew very little, the public, that is, knew very little about this population. And in order to come up with these rules, the Department of Public Safety sent out a confidential survey to all the members who are on the registry. And it gathered a whole lot of really interesting information, including why they use it, what symptoms they're using it for, where they get it in terms of what types of strains they're using, that is. And so they found it's roughly about 410 patients and another 60 or 70 or so caregivers. People in Vermont, you could designate somebody as your caregiver who will grow it for you.
How rigorous, then, do Vermonters feel the standards are? I mean, is there like a list of diseases that qualify? As we heard in Maine, it's glaucoma and AIDS and so forth.
Well, the way the law was initially written back in 2004, the law was very specific to HIV, AIDS, end-stage cancer, glaucoma, and multiple sclerosis. Then, you know, at that time, the debate was, you know, it was still a very controversial issue. You had law enforcement coming in to testify against the bill. You had on one side of the table the DEA agents and the state police coming in talking about how, you know, gangs of Hell's Angels will be coming in from Canada and we'll be seeing kilos of high-grade marijuana hitting the streets of Vermont and there'll be crime and all sorts of things. And on the other side of the table, you had, you know, the Older Women's League of Montpelier, you know, these 80- and 90-year-old grandmothers who were saying, you know, I have a glaucoma. It'd be nice to be able to, you know, puff on a joint and relieve the pain, but, you know, I don't want to break the law. And so the, you know, the dichotomy there was very stark. And I think that when the law eventually passed, a few years later, 2007, the legislature revisited the issue and they expanded it to include any patients who have a debilitating medical condition. That's the language, and that includes, you know, all sorts of pain. And right now, we know that the patients are using it for a wide variety of symptoms, you know, muscle spasms, you know, depression, nausea, migraines, things like that. But it's still, you know, it's not easy. You have to be under the care of a doctor for at least 6 months. You have to have an ongoing relationship with that doctor. Every year the doctor has to basically re-up your, it's not called a prescription here, they write a recommendation. And so it is. It's Vermont has one of the strictest medical marijuana laws in the country.
So not easy to get, as you said. And yet, on the other hand, you can now get it for, quote, any debilitating medical condition. That seems a pretty broad area to me.
I think the experience from, I will give the state police credit because, you know, back in 2004, I think there was a little bit of fear-mongering, but when the issue came up again in 2007, you know, they came forward and said, look, we haven't experienced, you know, many or hardly any of the problems that we expected might occur. There were a couple of people who were kicked off the registry for having, you know, too many plants and things like that. But for the most part, the system here in Vermont has operated the way it was expected to operate. And there's really not the sense that there's a whole lot of people out there who are saying, ooh, got a headache, do you think you could write me a prescription for a bong?
Well, all right, and they're thinking about adding post-traumatic stress disorder, too, in Vermont. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. Thank you very much, Ken. Good to hear from you, and good to get an update on what's happening in Vermont.
Thanks for having me.
Ken Picard, staff writer for 7 Days, a weekly newspaper in Vermont. We'll talk more about what may happen here in New Hampshire after a short break and take your calls, 1-800-892-6477.
The legacy one leaves for a community can last for generations. I'm Anna Moskoff, Plan Gifts Officer at NHPR, and I'd like to talk to you about the many ways in which you can support NHPR, like leaving a gift through your estate. You can make a lasting impact on this new service for the next generation of public radio listeners in New Hampshire. For more information, please call 800-639-4131 or visit the support page at nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from North Branch Construction Building Green for their clients and themselves project portfolio at the newly designed webpage northbranch.net. And from Dr. Rod Burdett in Riverview Dental of Concord and dedicated to enhancing your appearance, oral health, and wellness, the practice that listens online at smilesnh.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, the high stakes of gambling in the Granite State. We'll look at proposals to expand gambling here, especially in light of casinos coming in Massachusetts. Email us your thoughts on this topic before the program at exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today, we're checking in with the medical marijuana debate here in New Hampshire, and you can join us with your questions and comments on that now at 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Matt Simon, legislative analyst for the Marijuana Policy Project, and Tom Reed, deputy county attorney in Rockingham County. And gentlemen, let's go right back to our callers. And in Tufton Borough, Ted joins us. Hi, Ted. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
My wife has stage 4 metastatic breast cancer and has had it for 18 years. Currently, she's on a phase 1 clinical trial down in Boston that's keeping her alive, basically. And just over a year or so ago, we were told that her weight loss was getting too critical, that they were going to have to take her off the trial if she didn't stop losing weight. She was losing about a pound every 3 weeks, which is how often we go down there. And nothing works. None of the antiemetic drugs they have available, including Marinol, work at all. So on our way home one night from a particularly bad session, we stopped at a friend's house because she was getting sick in Massachusetts, where it's decriminalized. And our friend, who had also gone through a similar experience, said, well, here, try this. And the reaction that my wife had was instantaneous. It eliminated the nausea and vomiting, stopped immediately. So I have a problem with them saying that, you know, this hasn't been approved, and, you know, the DEA is in control of the whole thing, and it's kind of like the fox guarding the hen house. They've got a sorry, I've got a bit of a cold. They've got they've got a vested interest in keeping it illegal. And
Do you think they have a vested interest in keeping it illegal?
Well, because of the amount of money that they get for
combating it.
Right.
Yeah. You know, Tom, first of all, let me just say I'm very sorry about your wife. And good luck. And that's horrible that you have to go through that. To the point, Tom, that he raised about his wife's nausea, I have heard this from other folks having done this program, this subject before on this program. We do hear, especially from cancer patients, that they're so sick and they just can't eat. And then all of a sudden they have some marijuana and they can eat again. And it's like a miracle for these folks. I just wonder what you think about that.
Oh, as I said, anything we can do to speed up the process, to make sure that safe, well-studied drugs and medicines are available for people who are suffering, to ease their suffering, we need to do. We need to do. The concern is these so-called medical marijuana bills get proposed, and what you see in California is the average age or the median age of someone who's getting these drugs is 32 years old. It's someone with a history of abuse of drugs and alcohol. No history of life-threatening diseases.
Is there a middle way, Tom, between what you say, which is, you know, abuse, you're talking about people abusing the system, and, you know, devastatingly sick people like Tom's wife?
Well, the difficult thing here is, you know, we rely on scientific studies, and, you know, there are all kinds of studies that can be done, and you have to look at which group or which legalization advocacy group or anti-legalization group might be behind a study, look at studies that are unbiased, look at studies that are subject to peer review. And we're going to hear stories about people who have been relieved in one way or another, and maybe by smoked marijuana. But all the organizations, the medical organizations, the scientific organizations, the FDA, the National Academy of Sciences, they're against it because they don't think it's safe, and it hasn't been proven safe. The American Cancer Society, the American Glaucoma Foundation, the National Pain Foundation, the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, other medical societies, they all say they do not support medical marijuana. They're calling for more research on the component parts, and that needs to be sped up, and the approval process needs to be sped up, because absolutely we have to get things to people in need. It's unfortunate that, you know, the people who are voting on compassion, you know, that's obviously appropriate and appropriate action. And stories like this, about these individuals who have suffered, are compelling. They tear at your heartstrings. But there's a broader responsibility for the safety of the public and our medical system and supply of drugs. There's a procedure in place that works. If it's slowed down, we need to speed it up.
Go ahead, Matt, real quick.
Well, I just want to point out, I don't think any of the organizations on Tom's list there supports continuing to criminalize patients if they choose to use medical marijuana. They may not have taken positions on state level reforms like this, but they're also on the flip side, the American Nurses Association, the American Public Health Association, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. I can go on and on too, that say patients should have safe legal access to medical marijuana. So, I mean, we can find organizations on both sides of it, but the reality and the status quo, I think, is what we heard on the phone. There are people in New Hampshire that are having these experiences and are facing this difficult choice. Do I break the law? Do I become a criminal? Or do I use this substance that seems likely to help me. In Maine, in Vermont, they don't have to worry about being arrested and prosecuted. In New Hampshire, they do. And that's not the federal government. That's New Hampshire state law.
Although we did have that email earlier, Matt, from Seddon Savage, again, president of the American Pain Society, who said the current push to open access for smoked marijuana. She says, hey, no problem with putting those compounds in pill form and helping people. But to smoke marijuana, she's concerned about it. I'm quoting her. She says, undermines the safety and reliability of our pharmacy approval system and does not improve access to effective care for patients.
Sure. Let's talk about smoking. Smoking is the least healthy way to ingest medical marijuana by far. It's the only way that patients know. The patients that get in touch with me that are already using medical marijuana are smoking joints. They don't know about vaporizers. They don't know how to make tinctures. They don't know how to cook brownies. They don't know how to make things out of marijuana that would be more healthful for them. So they smoke joints and they risk arrests. We want to make sure they have safe, legal access to medical marijuana that isn't moldy, that is tested, that they know what's in it, that's not from the black market, and that they're able to use it in the most healthful way possible for them.
Well, she seemed to say that there is already approved, FDA-approved medications that can have the same impact, but they are, again, in medication form. And, you know, you don't even have to do all the other stuff that you talked about, vaporize and brownies and so forth.
Well, there's
so
just,
I'm just wondering why that's not good enough.
I hear from patient after patient that's tried Marinol in particular. It just doesn't work. It makes me want to throw up. And the recent research shows that, that other cannabinoids within marijuana interact with THC. You know, an analogy might be to cocaine and coca leaves. People have been chewing coca leaves for hundreds of years, but you take cocaine out of coca leaves and snort it up your nose, and it's a totally different substance. Taking THC out of marijuana and away from the other cannabinoids doesn't make it more medical. It makes it a lot less medical based on all the anecdotal evidence.
Well, let's go to a doctor now who has some experience with this issue. Joining us from California is Dr. Donald Lyman, chairman of the Technical Advisory Committee on Medical Cannabis of the California Medical Association. And Dr. Lyman, thanks for your time.
Good to be here.
Well, I know you've been working on this system for some time. First of all, just how hard is it to get medical marijuana in California? We hear about dispensaries popping up on street corners like Starbucks.
It's fairly easy to get it here. You need a physician to write a recommendation, not a prescription, but a recommendation. Take it to the dispensary, and then you can get the marijuana. So it is a very different situation here than you've described in New Hampshire.
And how does the medical community feel about that? Recognizing, of course, that doctors, just like everybody, have different opinions. In general, can you say, Dr. Lyman, how the medical community feels about this easy access in California?
We're very unhappy with this. We're unhappy because there's two uses for this. One is the medicinal marijuana. The other is the recreational. And it's very clear from what your panel has suggested that this medical access point is actually an access point for the recreational drug. So we have been made, as we call it, the gatekeeper to a substance for which there is no gate, and we're very unhappy with that. So for medicinal marijuana, we don't know from published literature just how safe and effective this substance is for a variety of medical conditions. And what we'd like to see is responsible access to this substance for research to document what it can and can't do and what its safety is. The same is true for the recreational, the non-medicinal. We need responsible access to that in such a way that it will keep it away from children, workers, people who have psychiatric problems, and drivers. We don't have a system that does that now. So the basic call we have made is for a changed regulatory status for cannabis, not a new law, not legalization. DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration, should change their regulatory option from prohibition to a responsible regulatory process, which gets
that mean
it under control.
What does that mean in layperson terms?
For medical marijuana, it means rescheduling it from what's called a Schedule 1 to something else, which will allow the research we're calling for.
So right now you can't even research the impact of it because it's a Class 1 drug.
It's very difficult. The DEA will say that it has been done, and in fact it has, and there are drugs on the market, as you've just referenced, but not much. For the recreational, we're calling for this substance to be regulated in much the same way tobacco and alcohol is today. And in doing that, you have levers to control the flow and keep it away from children and drivers and workers and crazy people.
You're calling for decriminalization then, it sounds like, right?
We already have decriminalization. 16 states have decriminalized this use.
Uh-huh.
We're calling for a regulatory process that can track this stuff and guarantee what it is. We don't have that, though.
Back to the medical side, if we could, Dr. Lyman, for just a minute. We heard a call earlier from Tom who, you know, just a devastating story about his wife, very sick, and after having some marijuana, immediate turnaround, decided she wanted to eat after all, after experiencing horrible nausea. I'm sure you hear stories like this all the time. So what medical evidence is there that marijuana does work? We hear stories like this. Is there hard studies, medical evidence?
There is some good evidence. For what is called neurogenic pain, pain that comes from trauma or from surgeries, it looks like this substance is quite useful, not as the first-line drug, but as a second- or third-line drug. For nausea, vomiting, and cancer patients and others, and this is what you're addressing here, it appears to be useful, but we don't have that documented evidence. And once again, it's not the first- or second-line drug. It is maybe third or fourth, which is exactly what your caller has described. They tried first, second, third line drugs, and finally went to marijuana, where it did work. But it's not the first line. We have other drugs that are quite effective and take precedence over this.
Why aren't the drugs that use compounds from marijuana good enough, Dr. Lyman? Again, we've heard about those that take some of the beneficial compounds and put them in pill form. Why aren't those good enough?
Well, they do have documented effectiveness, and there are clinical trials on those that show that it works for specific conditions.
So some cases they are good enough.
That's correct. But again, as the label says on them, they're not first-line drugs, and the label says we recommend you try other things first that we know are more effective. So they do work, not as well as some other things, and there's a lot of variation among patients as to what their response is to these things.
So just in summary, if you could, Dr. Lyman, the system that you have today in California, sounds like you're not happy with it. Briefly, what would be the ideal system? What would that look like? Would you have dispensaries? Would you have people growing their own? What's the perfect world for you?
Perfect world, first, we divide the world into two parts, medicinal and non-medicinal. For the medicinal, we'd like to see the substance reclassified from Schedule 1 to something else that will allow the research to take place. So I know what I'm writing a recommendation for, and I can guarantee its safety and its purity. On the non-medicinal side, we see a system something like alcohol and drugs today, alcohol and tobacco today, in which we know where the stuff comes from. We know how it's produced. In the Colorado experience, they describe this as seed to sack. So a regulatory scheme that tracks the stuff from when they plant it with the seed to when it's delivered to you in a sack. We know what it is, we know its strength, we know its safety, and there's a tax on it which funds research and education to help keep it away from people who should not have it.
Well, and as you well know, just because there's a regulatory structure for cigarettes and alcohol doesn't mean that teenagers can't get it. I mean, it's out there and they get it.
You're quite right, but the way it's structured now, it's kind of a universal access. We point out again and again, the American Medical Association and we as the state medical association, that this is a regulatory system which has failed. We want to get it under control. We want it more controlled. We will never have a perfect system, but the system we have now has failed and it needs to be replaced.
Well, Dr. Lyman, thanks for coming to the phone real early out there in California. I sure appreciate it.
Oh, it's not real early. The sun is just coming up. And we have an unusually warm and dry climate this year, and my cherry trees are in full bloom.
Well, it's good to talk to you. Thanks a lot.
Good. Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye. That's Dr. Donald Lyman joining us from Sacramento, California. Again, chairman of the Technical Advisory Committee on Medical Cannabis of the California Medical Association. And Matt Simon, Tom Reed, I want to spend just our last 2 minutes here focusing in on New Hampshire. So, Matt, look ahead. What's the status of the bill that you're promoting? Again, a pretty strict bill that would only allow patients to access marijuana with dispensaries and three dispensaries, I think is what you said, right?
Right.
So what's the status of that?
the status is, while we're waiting for the bill to be assigned a number and for a public hearing to be scheduled in the Senate, it will be a Senate bill. We're excited.
It starts in the Senate this time.
That's right. It passed the House overwhelmingly last time, so we're going to start in the Senate this time. And we do have four Republican state senators who have stepped up to be co-sponsors this year, so it's definitely bipartisan, and we think we have a pretty good chance with it. We're very excited.
Well, in 2009, when you came super, super close, the legislature was dominated by Democrats, now heavily dominated by Republicans. So how does that change the equation?
Well, conventional wisdom is that this is more of a Democrat issue than a Republican issue. But again, last year in the House, we have states where we can't find a Republican sponsor. But in the House last year, it was over half of the Republicans in the House voted for it. And as I said, we have four sponsors in the Senate this time. So we think it's clearly bipartisan that, you know, Republicans believe that health care decisions should be made between a patient and a doctor, and also care very deeply about privacy and things like that. So we don't want to see these people who are in situations like we heard about on the phone have to deal with trials and prosecutions and that sort of thing.
And Tom, how involved are county prosecutors like yourself going to get involved in fighting this legislation?
Well, I guess that remains to be seen. We certainly want to look at the legislation, but I think we should all have concerns with trying to have a state law that's at odds with federal law. I think we should all be concerned with trying to, bypass the process for making sure that drugs are safe. And that's what this is. This is money coming from very well-funded legalization advocates, and it's a step towards legalization going on the backs of our sympathies for people with real problems and illnesses.
All right. Well, both of you, thank you so much for being here. Tom Reed, thank you for your time.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Tom Reed, Deputy County Attorney in Rockingham County. And Matt Simon, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you, Laura.
Matt Simon, a legislative analyst for the Marijuana Policy Project, a national organization promoting reform of marijuana laws. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Ryan Lessard. The Exchange is now on Facebook. Join our page to continue the conversation and learn more about what we're planning every day. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.